It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Our next guest is a mother of two. When she found out her second child was going to be a boy, she thought she'd never get to teach her kid how to braid hair or play with Barbies.
But the little boy she gave birth to didn't turn out to be the sports-playing type after all. Lori Duran is the creator of the first mommy blog to focus on raising a gender-creative child, and the author of the new book, Raising My Rainbow, Adventures in Raising a Fabulous Gender Creative Son. Lori, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, you talk about raising your son, CJ, as a BB and AB, before Barbie and after Barbie. Can you tell us what happened that day?
Yes, his life is marked in time by before Barbie and after Barbie. So before Barbie, he was born up until the time he was 2 and a half, and he would get the hand-me-downs from his brother Chase, and they would be trains and trucks and cars and balls and action figures that he just wasn't interested in. He was a happy child, but just nothing seemed to grab his attention. And then there was a day when he found a Barbie that had been in my closet, and sometimes we say that's the day he came alive. And from that point on, it's been after Barbie, and he says that's the day he knew that he liked girl stuff.
What was his reaction like when he found that Barbie buried in your closet?
He saw it, so I was cleaning out my closet, and I actually grabbed it and threw it onto my bed. It was in a box. It was a boxed 50th anniversary Barbie. And he came into my room, and he saw it, and his eyes just lit up, and he grabbed it off the bed and started jumping up and down. He said, "What, Dad? What, Dad?" Because he was 2 and a half. He wanted to know what it was, and when I said, "It's a Barbie," he said, "I want to open she." And, like, he just couldn't, he was not going to take no for an answer, so... At first, I was hesitant to open it because, as anyone knows, you don't open a box to Barbie because they depreciate in value. And I thought he's going to play with it for a day or two and then get bored of it, but he didn't. That's the day he really did start liking girl stuff.
And what was your reaction? What was going through your head when you realized that he wasn't just taking a shine to this Barbie? I mean, this was going to be a swerve in his life.
Well, there were lots of conversations. The first day or two, it felt a little uncomfortable seeing him play with a doll, but it also reminded me of my brother who had played with Barbies as a child with me. And I thought, oh, it's just a short phase, but it wasn't. And there were lots of conversations that CJ's dad and I had late at night in our room trying to figure out what it meant. I think as parents, we're always trying to figure out our kids and what does it mean and what do I need to do next and what do I need to do as a parent. But when that happens and when your child starts to show signs of gender nonconformity and possibly being transgender, there are no answers. So it's scary.
So did you have to navigate those waters on your own, or did you seek professional help at a certain point?
Initially, it was on our own, and then talking to my brother, who, like I said, now we know he was gender nonconforming at heart as a child, and he now identifies as gay. But it was talking to him because our parents weren't great about it and weren't supportive of his gender nonconformity. So it was talking to him and then talking to each other, but I couldn't find any experts or resources, and I think like any mom in my generation, I went online to find answers and mommy blogs or parenting websites that address the issue of boys playing with girl things or wanting to wear girl clothes, and I couldn't find anything, and so that's when I started my blog, raisingmyrainbow.com.
So you talk about how in the beginning you tried to draw lots of lines in the sand, saying, okay, you can play with all this pink girly stuff, but it has to be only at home. And then, you can do it in the car too, but it can't be outside the car. What was that process like as you sort of opened the door to let the world see what your son really was and let him be himself? How did that process go?
Yeah, I felt like I was trying to protect him, or like we were trying to protect him. So we did have those lines of you can play with the girl toys and wear the girl clothes at the house, but not out of the house. And then you can do it in the car, but not out of the car. And then you could do it at this destination, but not that destination. And it was confusing him and it was confusing us because we had drawn these lines, but then we'd erase them and move them or move them back or move them forward. And so it was really confusing and we weren't parenting consistently with him. And then we also got to the point where we realized our older son, Chase, was allowed to bring his action figures and his Legos anywhere he wanted. There weren't these restrictions. So we realized that we were really parenting unfairly and that we were also drawing those lines because we were worried about what other people would think or say, and we realized we can't parent based on what other people, what their reaction's going to be. We have to parent based on what's best for our son.
So your worst fears, when your mom kind of asked you, what are you so afraid of? And you just sort of blurted out what other people think. You were thinking the worst, that your son was going to get bullied, that people were going to judge you and your family. What happened? Did that come to pass, those fears?
Sometimes, but I had to get to the point where I realized that that was my biggest fear. And then I was so disappointed in myself because that's not the kind of person or mother that I want to be, you know, constantly afraid of what other people are going to think or what they're going to say. So I had to be a woman. I had to be an adult and realize that it didn't matter what they said. What mattered was my son's safety. And the statistics for boys like CJ aren't great as far as their safety and their adulthood go. So I needed to make sure that I focused on him and not others' reactions.
What do you mean by safety? What are the things that can happen to transgender kids?
Kids who are in the LGBTQ community, so that's lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community, they have the, and especially those who are gender nonconforming or transgender, have the highest rate of attempted suicide in the world. They are much more likely to experience or suffer from major depression, substance abuse, unsafe sexual behaviors as adults. And then nearly all of them report being bullied or teased at school, and a lot of them report being bullied and teased at home as well. So it's kind of a bleak future if you don't support these kids and get them the help and give them the unconditional love that they deserve.
Now, you're credited with having the first blog like this, the first blog about raising a non-gender conforming child that's been out there. What is the response been as you put your family out there for everyone to know and to learn from?
Well, I was really careful, too, when I started. So on my blog, I've never shown a picture of our faces. I just showed a picture of my face with the release of my book, but I haven't shown the kids' faces, and I'm careful about what I write about. I really wanted it to be for parents. So it's from the viewpoint of me as a parent and my adventures in raising him. It's not some of his personal private struggles. They're definitely issues that are his that I haven't written about on the blog, but it was scary. It was scary because I felt so alone. That's part of the reason why I started the blog. And so I put it out there hoping people would find me, but then there was this lingering, what if I really am alone? What if there is no one else out there? But I quickly found that there were other families like ours, and they had been looking for the resources that I had been looking for. And so I slowly, over the course of 3 years, I've had over a million viewers and in 173 countries. And that's something that surprised me, too, is that this is a global parenting issue.
And so have you created kind of a network, a community of parents who are raising kids the way you are?
Yeah, I do. I have a network, and I have parents that I talk to who are in France and Ireland and Iran, the Philippines, all over. And then we also, which is really great, is we started a gender nonconforming play group in our area. So about once a month we get together, and there's a handful of us families that have gender nonconforming sons, and we get together and they get to do exactly what they want to do and be who they're created to be. And then sometimes the siblings come along, and sometimes the moms and the dads, we get together and it's a big family ordeal, but it's fun for all those kids to get together, and that's been one of the best parts.
It seems as though we're on sort of a new frontier when it comes to accepting different forms of gender in our society. And that, NPR recently ran a story about how it's pretty common practice in a lot of college classrooms now for students to go around, say their name, and say what gender pronouns they want to be identified with. And so there's I don't know, it seems like there's this burgeoning awareness of what is going on there in terms of gender. Do you feel that as well?
I do feel it. And I feel, just because stories like ours and are getting attention and are getting even published or put out there, I feel like people are starting to see it, and maybe they're a little bit more willing to see it. And to me, like that, the example that you gave about pronouns isn't even so much a gender issue. It's an empathy issue, and it's treating people like people and treating them how they want to be treated. So, I mean, that's our big thing, is that you don't have to understand gender, sex, and sexuality and the distinct differences between all of them. But if you could just have empathy and an open heart and open mind, that's all we ask for. And I think that's all anyone asks for, no matter their gender or sex or sexuality.
We're talking right now with Lori Duran, author of Raising My Rainbow, Adventures in Raising a Fabulous Gender Creative Son. She blogs at raisingmyrainbow.com.
How about you now? Are you the parents or grandparents of what we're talking about, a gender creative child? Do you need advice? Do you think, you see a kid playing with a doll and you think, ooh, that's a problem, or that's no big deal? Give a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. We're talking now with Lori Duran, author of the first mommy blog to chronicle the life of a gender-creative child. And we want to hear from you. What questions do you have? Are you going through an experience similar to Lori's with a child who doesn't conform to a particular gender? And what challenges have you faced? Or if you've come across children like this out and about, what do you think? And how do you think, what do you think of Lori's example of how she's handling it? Our number, 1-800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Lori, early on, you tell a story about one of your first Christmases after Barbie, where your son CJ demonstrates this huge, you know, affinity for Barbies and pink things. And you're trying to navigate those waters at Christmas time, trying to decide what to get him that'll make him happy, but that, you know, won't be too out there. Can you tell us that story about that Christmas?
Yeah, it was Christmas time, and it had been a couple months since we'd noticed CJ's gender nonconformity, although at that point we didn't know what to call it. We just knew that he liked girl stuff. And so it was Christmas, and so I bought him a baby doll, but it was a blue boy baby doll, and I got him a stroller because I knew he'd love the stroller to push it around, but I got him a blue stroller, and then we got him a car for his Barbies, but it was white, and it had some decals, some pink decals and flowers that we could have put on it, but we left them off. So I felt like I was getting him girl stuff in a way, but it was boy stuff in a way, and I thought it was playing it safe because, you know, a lot of people will tell me, well, if you take all the girl stuff away, he'll play with the boy stuff, and he'll like the boy stuff. So that was me trying to play it safe, or I don't know what, but he just wasn't as excited. He hung on to that original Barbie that he had found. He opened it all up, and he would push things around in the stroller, but, you know, it wasn't exactly what he wanted. And, of course, his brother got everything that he wanted, or pretty much all of the main things, and he got his Legos and everything else and remote control cars, and he was ecstatic, but CJ was left a little bit underwhelmed, and my husband said to me, you know, we're not going to do that again next year. If he still likes girl stuff, we're going to get him girl stuff. But that was part of our evolution and part of us not fully accepting it or being comfortable with his gender nonconformity.
And you come to the point where you have really strong feelings about this, and you're providing that support network for your child that maybe your brother didn't have growing up. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your feelings about Dr. Phil, who has had people ask him, you know, what do I do if my child, my son likes girl stuff? And you don't like his answer.
Yeah, he says to redirect and to take the girl toys away and only provide boy toys and redirect them and redirect their attention towards masculine things. And it's sad. It's sad to me. I've never met Dr. Phil, but his answers that he provides are sad because I feel like they can do a lot of harm to the children and to the parents. And I think that he has a lot of power to do a lot of good. And so I wish that his answer would be different and that he wouldn't ask to redirect. There's been studies done on trying to redirect and do reparative therapy to kids and to adults who are like CJ. And it's been really, really dangerous. Even studies that have been deemed a success. One of the biggest ones that came out of UCLA, the boy eventually died from suicide and it wasn't his first attempt. So, you know, it makes me sad.
Okay, I want to go to the phones right now. And don't forget, you can join this conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Let's go to Maureen in Oshkosh. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. I have a couple comments. I certainly support that children should not be forced into gender binaries, but it occurs to me that some of what your guest is talking about seems to reinforce gender binaries. I mean, we have every single toy in our society which is gendered now. We can't even get a green bike. We have to get a pink slumber party bike or a black assault attack bike. Why can't we just have dolls and toys and green bikes and blue bikes and red bikes and not, you know, we have gendered toothpaste now for children. So I feel like, you know, that's part of the problem. And in some ways, going the sparkle glitter route is reinforcing gender binaries. That's my first point. My second point is, isn't some of this sexualizing children before they are actually sexual beings? So to talk about a gay, lesbian, or transgender four-year-old, or even a straight four-year-old, seems to me to be imposing adult categories on children. So I look forward to your response.
Okay, thank you, Maureen. And what do you think, Lori?
I think in a way she's right. I mean, not even in a way, but when it comes to the toy section, there are pink aisles and there are blue aisles. And so we had never even ventured into the pink aisles with our sons before because we had boys. And so you go to the blue aisles and there are toy stores over in Europe that they separate by the kind of toy, you know, like all dolls or all circus theme. It's not pink and it's not blue. Why can't the toy aisles all be yellow and then kids could find what they like amongst the gender neutral colors? So I totally agree. And I wish that there were more choices for CJ that were more or considered to be gender neutral or gender neutral in color. So I totally agree with that. As far as am I imposing some sort of other gender stereotype on him? No, I'm letting him choose what he likes to play with. He's 6 and a half, so I let him do that now. And it happens to be things that would be considered more fabulous and sparkly. That's what he's drawn to. So he's 6 and a half, so I let him choose his own toys. And then the sexualizing, I've never claimed a sexuality for my son. He's 6. He doesn't have one, or at least he doesn't have one that he's told me about so far. So why do I group him in with the LGBTQ community is because we have considered that he's transgender or that he's Q. He's questioning his gender. So that's why we group him in there, and also because that community has been so great and has had such a wealth of knowledge for us.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the call, Maureen. And we go next to Reggie in Milwaukee. Hi, Reggie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I called in because I'm an out gay man, and I'm the pursuits that I have pursued in my life. And sorry, there's some dogs barking in the background. But the things that I pursued in my life have been things that people might perceive as being strictly masculine endeavors. But they, for me, as a child, they were always framed in a feminine kind of way. So I was really into the female warrior as a child. I grew up watching Linda Carter as Wonder Woman. I wanted the Wonder Woman doll, but wasn't allowed to get it. Mm. But at the same time, I excelled in sports and athleticism, but it was always framed in a way where, like, a typical guy might say, I'm a warrior. Well, I'll tell you, I'm an Amazon. And the thing with that, though, is that from the outside and on the surface, it might look like those are typical masculine endeavors, but it's always been framed in a way that has been referential to the female warrior. I'm in criminal justice law enforcement to be a cop, and I'll tell you all day I represent the Amazon. And a child that's into feminine toys and the matter may not necessarily be transgender, but might be a gay man or a gay woman, a lesbian, but at the same time, they may also be transgender.
Right.
And I think, though, I maybe possibly had it a little easy because of the fact that I so identified with the female warrior. And in our society, people, when it comes to men, really respect that sort of aggressiveness and athleticism. And that's just kind of my 2 cents on the matter.
All right, Reggie, thank you so much. What an interesting call. And, you know, he's talking about how he liked some pursuits that were traditional, but they were framed differently. They were framed from, you know, the Amazon perspective as a female warrior. What do you think about that, Lori?
I love his perspective and I love his strength. My brother, too, wanted a Wonder Woman doll, but was not allowed to have one as a child. So I identify with that. And then my husband is a police officer, so I identify with that as well. And I think that sense of strength and confidence is what I hope to instill in CJ so that no matter what he has to face going forward, he's just a really strong, confident person as an adult.
Okay, I think we may have time for one more quick call. Jenny in Williams Bay, you're next. Hi.
Hi, I just wanted to say she's calling toys already girl toys or boy toys. You don't have to really call toys girl or boy to your kid. Just call it a toy. My 5-year-old likes pink things too, and we don't really call them girl toys. We get a lot of Melissa and Doug toys, I guess, where they're like neutral. We don't go in the toy aisle a lot, like at Target, because it is so segregated. So as long as you don't call them girl or boy toys, you know, early on, I think they understand more.
Right.
You know,
all right.
All
well, thank you so much for the call, Jenny. Appreciate that. And Melissa and Doug toys, I think, are for a younger demographic than your child, CJ. What do you think, Lori?
Yeah, and I just want to be absolutely clear. Like in our house, colors are for everyone. Toys are for everyone. We don't say things are girl toys or boy toys, but I do in conversations like this. So, because if I just said toys, sometimes it's confusing to people or they don't quite understand or they can't paint that picture in their head of my son playing with girl toys. But in our house, everything is to be enjoyed by everyone.
Well, Lori, it's been great. Thank you so much for talking today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
That was Lori Duran, author of Raising My Rainbow, Adventures in Raising a Fabulous Gender Creative Son. She blogs at raisingmyrainbow.com.
Coming up after the news, a look at today's G20 summit, conflict there between leaders of the United States and elsewhere over Syria.
And we profile Dukes of Hazzard star Tom Wopat in the latest installment of our Wisconsin Legends series. This is Central Time, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned, there's more to come.